the world we know is changing. Welcome to Biotech Nation. Today on Biotech Nation, we learn about a treatment being developed for cocaine addiction and work in the tropical disease leishmaniasis. We also discover the surprising relation of addiction to dopamine, the depletion of which is present in Parkinson's and other related diseases. Today I'm joined by Steve Hurst, the president and CEO of Savant HWP. Well, Steve, welcome back to Biotech Nation.
Thanks for having me, Maura. It's great to be back.
Well, I know you're in the area of addiction. This is a really important area in a lot of ways. The first part you have been working on is cocaine. Bring us up to date on where your cocaine efforts are.
So the last time I was here, we hadn't yet put the drug into a human. And the initial phase of our testing in humans is to look at safety. So we start with normal, healthy volunteers. We did our first—
That don't have anything to do with cocaine.
They have nothing to do with addiction, nothing to do with cocaine. The cocaine part of the project comes from the funding that we received from the National Institute on Drug Abuse. They gave us an initial grant of $6.8 million in late 2012 to do the early development in animals, the early toxicology workup in animals for the drug. We completed that work very successfully under the grant. And then we were able to start our first in-human clinical trials in July. So we start with normal, healthy volunteers, and we give them the drug and see what happens. It's very important study.
They don't take cocaine.
They don't take
cocaine. We just want to make sure
non-smokers, non-alcoholics. It all starts with, is it safe to give it to a human being? And this is a tremendously important milestone for this drug, for 18-MC. Because if you remember, it's a derivative of a natural compound called ibogaine. And ibogaine is extracted from the bark of a plant that grows in West Africa. And about 50 years ago, it was discovered that ibogaine had very strong anti-addictive properties, that it was very effective in preventing withdrawal from opiates, and that in a number of people that took ibogaine, they no longer had any craving to go back to using their opiates or using whatever substance they'd become addicted to. The problem with ibogaine is it's got some horrible side effects. It's strongly hallucinogenic, and it causes cardiac arrhythmias in a number of people that have taken it. So it was very quickly put on Schedule 1 by the FDA and the Drug Enforcement Agency,
which means
you can't get it.
No.
There's no – in fact, the true definition of Schedule 1, paraphrasing a little bit, is has no medicinal value. That's what a true Schedule 1 drug is, Schedule 1 substance. And there's a lot of substances that fall into that category. So our drug is part of what's called a medicinal chemistry program, where you take the basic backbone of the chemistry and you change all the little side molecules to various degrees. You make lots of different compounds in a library, and then you go and test them to see if they have the property you're looking for. So in this case, the library of compounds that was made was tested for anti-addictive properties. And then you look to see, well, does it have the side effects? Is it going to kill brain cells, for example? Is it toxic to the brain? Is it toxic to the heart? So 18-MC was the 15th compound tested in this library of 50 compounds that was synthesized a number of years ago. The first one that showed strong anti-addictive properties and potentially no side effects. So for us, putting it in a human and confirming that it's not psychoactive.
Doesn't do any harm, and there's no imagined, no hallucinations, nothing like that.
No cardiac arrhythmias, all of that is actually a very big milestone for this program. So we did that this summer. The drug is much better behaved than we expected it to be, meaning that more of it gets absorbed into the system of a human than we were expecting based on what we'd seen in animals. So we're actually able to finish this first study very early rather than doing six separate studies to build up the dose. We achieved everything we needed in the first study that we did. The drug was very well behaved. So the next step, which we start later this year, early next year, is to start giving the drug again to healthy volunteers for 14 days, one or two doses a day over a 14-day period of time to look at what's called the steady state kinetics of the drug in the human body. So we'll dose up to a level after which you're not changing the levels in the blood We'll look at that over a period of time and make sure there are no side effects, and then we'll start treating patients.
Now, I know that the National Institute on Drug Abuse was interested in the cocaine effects and the effects on the cocaine user. You're looking right away to look in other areas.
The drug is really special because it should work in almost any type of addiction, any substance per se. Current therapies, they take two approaches. There's an aversion approach, which is what we do with alcohol with a drug called anabuse. So you take anabuse, and if you drink alcohol, it makes you vomit, makes you deathly ill, basically. Very unpleasant kind of an effect. All the other treatments are what are called substitution therapies. So we take a drug like heroin that has a very high abuse liability and a very high health risk, and we replace it with a drug that does much the same thing but with a lower abuse liability and a lower health risk, like methadone or Suboxone, for example, and opiates. Those don't treat the disease. They treat the symptom of the disease, and they prevent you from going into withdrawal, and they prevent the craving by basically giving you something that does what the drug does but doesn't make you super high or stupid or ineffective, essentially. So someone that's on methadone, a lot of times they'll be on methadone their whole lives once they go on it, or Suboxone, for example. And withdrawal from those drugs is actually much harder than withdrawal from, for example, from heroin, because the way the mechanism works. So these drugs don't really hit the disease. The cause of the disease is a dysregulation of a substance, a chemical in the brain called a neurotransmitter, and the drug is dopamine. The neurotransmitter is dopamine, and dopamine's been associated with Parkinson's disease, for example, with motor neuron disease and the like, you know, dopamine levels. And in the motor centers of the brain, it's effective in providing motor skills. So if you have a deficit in the motor centers of the brain, right, you have a motor skill issue. But you can't just give dopamine systemically. In fact, there was recently a lawsuit settled by Pfizer because their Parkinson's patients that were given a drug that increases dopamine was leading to them developing a gambling addiction or some other type of an addiction. And they just settled this class action lawsuit within the last month and a half or so. And it's not the first one for Parkinson's drugs. Other companies with Parkinson's drugs have had similar side effects in their patients. So we come back to the whole, well, what's dopamine doing in addiction? What happens in addiction is the whole addiction process is driven by dopamine in the pleasure centers of our brain. So when we experience pleasure, we get a release of dopamine in our midbrain, the most primitive part of the brain, and that's what gives us a sensation of pleasure, and it's what makes it very reinforcing. It's what we want to feel, and if you think about it from an evolutionary standpoint, it makes sense. Do what feels good, you'll probably live longer. Don't do what feels bad, you probably won't live as long, right? I mean, that's kind of the way it works. So this is a very important mechanism. And in addiction, what happens is the drugs are so powerful at causing dopamine release in the pleasure centers of the brain that it overrides the entire dopamine regulation in the pleasure centers and causes a dysregulation. So you no longer have normal regulation. You no longer have normal highs and lows in terms of your dopamine level. And when you're not using the substance, the body actually takes all of the dopamine out of the pleasure centers of the brain, causing acute distress. That drives craving, which leads people to want to find the substance that gave them the pleasurable experience.
That's addiction.
Whatever the substance is. And it's probably true for gambling. Could be true for sexual addiction. Anything that is pleasure-based that leads to an overwhelming craving to engage in the activity could potentially be addressed by 18MC, potentially even a compulsive eating disorder, for example. And we do have some data in some fat rat models. Believe it or not, there are models of fat rats.
Really?
Yeah.
So obesity
when you treat animals, the rats that are prone to getting obese, they're bred that way. If you treat them with 18MC, they do not gain weight the way the control groups do. So again, it's the same mechanism. But this is the only thing in development that we're aware of that goes to the central mechanism of addiction. And it's a single substance, a drug that addresses all addictions, right? It's an oral tablet or capsule will be the form. And as I said, we have this collaboration with the National Institute on Drug Abuse for cocaine. Now, we'll develop it for tobacco, nicotine. We'll develop it for opiates, opiate withdrawal, also opiate craving. We'll hopefully be able to develop it for alcohol, which is the biggest problem in addiction. There's about 17 million people in this country that should be treated that have alcohol addiction that aren't in treatment. It's a big problem.
In addition to this, you're looking at some conditions that I would never associate with addiction. I know you're going to leishmaniasis. You're working in Brazil on that, right?
We do work with a collaborator in Brazil. It's a Brazilian pharmaceutical company called Hebron Pharmaceutica. And they approached this a number of years ago to work in the area of leishmaniasis. Now, leishmaniasis is an infectious disease that you get by being bitten by a sandfly. And it transmits a protozoa. You remember your biology from high school. It's a little single-celled organism that grows and duplicates inside your body. Leishmaniasis has several forms of the disease. There's a disfiguring form called cutaneous leishmaniasis, which is rarely fatal, but it's the most prevalent form. There's a mucosal form of leishmaniasis that can be fatal, but it works mostly in the mucosal tissues. And then there's something called visceral leishmaniasis, which is often fatal. So lots of leishmanias cases happen in Brazil every year. In fact, up until a few years ago, it was a seasonal disease. There was a season. It would start in October. They'd see lots of new cases in Brazil up until maybe March or April, and then it would taper off. In the last few years, it's become a year-round disease. So it's epidemic. It's getting worse. There are treatments, but they're injection treatments. The treatments are not very pleasant, and they're not highly effective. So an oral drug that treats leishmaniasis becomes important. Why 18-MC? 18-MC, as I told you, comes from a plant. And the chemical backbone is called chlorinaridine. It turns out that chlorinaridine is in other plant extracts that have been associated with medicinal properties. So about 10 years ago, a PhD student in Brazil did his thesis work on chlorinaridines in leishmaniasis. And as a result of that work, he asked for a very small sample of 18-MC and found out that 18-MC was very effective in killing the parasite that causes leishmaniasis. He then explored the mechanism of action, and the mechanism of action that kills the protozoa in leishmaniasis, we don't see in humans or in mammals. So it's a completely different mechanism of action. It has nothing to do with nicotinic receptors, which is the target of 18-MC in addiction. And it actually disrupts the mitochondrial function, but it seems to only work in certain protozoal species. Complete serendipity.
This is just luck.
It's dumb luck, and I'll take that over skill any day of the week.
Yeah. Was that a rather be lucky than smart?
I'll go with that. I'll take that, too.
Go with that. How infrequently do we have something that has benefits in so many different ways? This is a very unusual treatment in that regard.
And I think it hurts the credibility of our story. If you think about it, you know,
it solves everything for everybody.
You get the, you know, it's the panacea or you know, too good to be true, you know, syndrome. But if you really look at our data very carefully and look at the work that we've done, we've been pretty rigorous, and the people that we collaborate with are very, very good, very strong scientists. And everything that we're doing is based on, again, very good data, very strong science. And all we can do is really hope that human beings are not so different from rats or monkeys when it comes to substance abuse, that the drug does not work as well as we see in those animal models. Now, one of the things that gave us huge confidence about this project going into it is that they're called self-administration models. So you can take almost any mammal and teach it to self-administer a drug that gets them high. It's just the way mammals are. Pleasure center driven.
That's true.
Pleasure center driven.
We know that. Yeah.
We can do it with mice. We can do it with rats. We can do it with dogs.
Pellets, Pavlov. Remember anything?
All of that. So this pleasure mechanism is so strong that it's really well conserved across mammalian species. So when we see efficacy in a rat self administration model or in a monkey non human primate model, it really gives us encouragement that we're going to see those efficacy signals in humans. So stay tuned. It's coming. I get a lot of calls from parents or spouses of people that have disease. I get a lot of calls from addicts themselves asking when. And all I can tell people is the first thing we have to do is make sure we're going to do no harm. And when we know we won't do any harm, then we will start trying this in patients and see if we can actually help them. But because of the data in Ibogaine and the history of Ibogaine and all of the stories of addicts that were helped by Ibogaine, plus what we see with 18-MC in our animal models, in our toxicology, and what we've now seen in our first in human, we're pretty encouraged.
Steve Hurst is the president and CEO of Savant HWP. HWP stands for Health, Wellness, and Prevention. More information is available at savanthwp.com. That's Savant, S-A-V-A-N-T, savanthwp.com. For Biotech Nation, I'm Moira Gunn.
Tech Nation and its regular segment Biotech Nation are produced at the studios of KQED-FM in San Francisco. Executive producer is Matt Gardner. The director of technical production is Monte Carlos. And audio engineers include Howard Gelman, Seal Mahler, and Larry Upton. Our theme music was composed by Ann Nachtrieb-Zesiger and Robert Powell, with title creation provided by NameLab Incorporated of San Francisco. Program information and internet audio is available on the web at technation.com. Tech Nation and Biotech Nation are productions of Tech Nation Media. I'm Paul Landcor.